and welcome to The Mighty Cast with Chris Young and Nick Ritchie from GetMightyNow.com, the skeptic's guide to strength, muscle, and fitness. If your goal is to get bigger, stronger, and smarter, you've come to the right place. Look like Humpty Dumpty, have a pair of chicken legs, or think, evolution's just a theory. You can do better, and we're here to help.
Hello, and welcome to Mighty Cast 135. Today's Mighty Cast is on failure to succeed. And when you see a title like that, you know it's one of Nick's babies. How you doing, Nick?
Doing pretty good, Chris. For our listeners, I had kind of a major life event recently. My youngest brother passed away of pneumonia at the age of 23. So I put this together without quite as many notes as usual. But, you know, that might be a refreshing, a breath of fresh air because those things can get quite long-winded. So hopefully this will be a little shorter one for you guys today.
We're not freewheeling as we did once before.
Out of the episodes.
Actually, we didn't freewheel it. I had notes and you didn't. But
okay, almost freewheeling.
That was the one where I emailed you 1 minute before I called you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then after the thing, you're like, didn't you see my email? Like, yeah. I think it was 1 minute after, actually. according to my timestamp, anyway.
Oh, it was stuck in the ether for a couple of minutes, no doubt.
The inter-ether.
Whatever that is. No, whatever that is. But, yeah, it's great to have Nick back. And, all the Dark Side boys, Nick, are, they're sending their best wishes. And Marie and Becky and a few others who you know in this country are, yeah, all pulling for you and your family, so it's tough times, but you know, you've got a lot of people caring about you.
I felt that when it happened. So yeah, thank you very much to everyone. Especially when I went to the States. Everyone was incredibly supportive and I felt a whole lot of love and connection and that was just a very nice thing. So thank you.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway, so here we go. Failure to succeed. So, what's the first common cause of failing to succeed that you want to discuss today?
Yeah, well, I really only had, three major problems, yes. Things to discuss.
I was going to say, should we wait a minute until we discuss it?
Wait a minute before we get to the first bullet?
Exactly.
just so we have more time?
No, because it's procrastination.
Yeah. So yeah, the first common cause was procrastination, I would say. It's these are just off the top of my head, but it's a thing that I fall into. I mean, everybody falls into these to some extent or another. Well, I think so. How about you, Chris? Do you ever procrastinate on anything?
Really? Never.
Never.
I sort of go, should I lie here in my bed? Just have another snooze, or shall I actually move my fat ass and go and do a bit of lifting? And I can turn to my right and see my gym from my bed. That's how convenient it is. And it's still bloody hard to go in there sometimes, Nick.
It's tough on your burrito.
Yes.
The burrito, for our listeners, if you're not familiar, it's where you are just rolled up in your blanket on your bed, feeling very comfortable and looking like a burrito.
Yes. Well, as long as you're not about, Nick, I don't mind looking like a burrito, but God knows, you'd probably devour me.
As long as you don't putting like guacamole on top of your duvet or something, then that might be a problem. But otherwise I think you're safe. I can tell the difference.
Well, as long as I don't become one of those, people with mobility issues who has more sauce on their t-shirt than, they got in their last meal, I should be okay.
That's my father, by the way. No, just sometimes. It was funny because at my family's house, I kept spilling stuff on my dad's shirts. And I'm like, Mom, I don't get it. Like, when I wear dad's shirts, I just spill stuff on myself all the time. And she's like, oh, seriously? Fuck off.
You know you've you've nailed it on the head when your parents swear at you.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Yeah, what is it you said once before? You're sitting there complaining about the quarterback not being worth the money, and you've got ketchup on your shirt. Your opinion doesn't count.
Yeah.
Love it. Yes. Yeah. Oh, boy. Anyway, I just want to say before we get on with procrastination, we have procrastinated. There you go. We're giving you fine examples of procrastination as we speak. If you can hear a weird noise sounding like someone taking their dying breath, that's my bull terrier snoozing next to me.
Yeah,
Louis's fine. He's just lying here snoozing away. That's pretty much all he does his whole life. So just like me, really. Anyway, right, procrastination, Nick.
All right.
What causes that to procrastinate?
A few different things I'll see oftentimes. One is the trap of the academic or the erudite oftentimes. It's just the paralysis by analysis. It's like, well, there's so much information out there about it. I want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing before I start doing anything. And oftentimes that can start off with, well, I'm just going to, you know, look at how to do this exercise quickly on YouTube. And then that turns into, you know, 5 hours of kittens or something. So you can easily get sidetracked when you're procrastinating. Or you might actually stay on task and then find conflicting information and try to resolve it. And, you know, just end up going down these rabbit holes that, you know, take you nowhere. There's paralysis by analysis. You're overthinking shit. And then there's also the optimization trap where you actually aren't paralyzed, but you're spending way too much time trying to get it all right before you begin. So again, it's like, do I just go to the gym and do something? That would be like the most basic thing, which I basically try to get, you know, people to do when they start off. It's like, all right, week one, you need to get your ass into the gym for 3 hours or 2 hours, right? And just go there and do these things. You know, don't care about form, just don't hurt yourself, you know, and you know, just go do it. That's one extreme where, you know, people aren't really doing much planning at all or any, but they're actually doing the right thing that's going to help them and making a habit. Or on the other end, it's like, well, how am I going to periodize my training for the next 6 months and stuff, and they never actually go to the gym, which is again a complete waste of time. So
yeah.
I think the question is always just, it's to kind of get over it, it's like, well, what can I do right now that is slightly better than what I'm doing? And if you know, this gets back to the old Kaizen approach. You know, it's what's one small thing that I can do that will guarantee success in the future? You know, all these things that'll kind of build on each other. So with procrastination, it's like, okay, what can I do right now that would be slightly better than what I've done? And then just get to it. Set a timer. I do love timers. I use them all the friggin' time. And, so just set that timer, do it for 5 minutes or do it for 30 minutes or however long you need to. But, you know, just set a timer and get to it. Don't think about it. And kind of like those nasty sets of squats, right? Where you're just like, yeah. Oh God, I don't want to do another set. And it's like, well, you just, you know, set a timer. You don't think about it. You do it. If you think about it, you're not going to want to do it. So just best not to think about it.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. If you can get a distraction like a timer going, and you just go, okay, I'll just keep going until the thing winks out at the end, then you're halfway there, really. One thing that came to my mind as you were saying all this, Nick, is that people might be thinking, okay, yeah, I've come across the Mighty Cast, and you guys sound like you know what you're talking about, but you know, how do I know I should follow your plan for eating sensibly, or your plan for exercising in a way that's going to help me lose body fat? You know, how do I know this? And I'd always say a good skill to develop is your skeptical thinking skills.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to some websites, and if they're offering things which sound too good to be true, they probably are. If they're offering 6-minute abs, is it, Nick, or 7-minute abs?
Oh, I think I think 6 minute abs was the improvement that was going to make millions above 7 minute abs, but 5 minute abs was just stupid. I think that's how he's phrased.
Right? that was a scene from Something About Mary, wasn't it? Where the guy goes, "That'd be stupid. You can't do anything in 5 minutes." Yeah, but yes, if you learn to think skeptically, then you start to get red flags popping up when you go onto certain websites. So if you, let's say you just want to learn how to, I don't know, let's say you're learning how to write essays, and you go to a website and they say that, within a month of paying your money to us, you'll be writing for the Huffington Post Online and Slate and all these, The Nation, Atlantic, whatever. You know, all these sort of high-end, the Huffington Post isn't high-end, but...
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you probably could just start writing articles for them and making, you know, 20 cents an article today if you wanted to.
Yes.
Because they do massive sourcing of their content to just random people that are willing to put in the time. Let's
stick with the more quality.
Let's say you're going to be published in Nature by next month or something, and you're not an academic.
Science or something like that. And you just sort of go, well, hang on, you know, I hardly know what punctuation is. You know, how am I going to go from where I am now to being able to write for a journal which is seen by hundreds of thousands of people and not be a laughing stock? Yes, it sounds too good to be true. Whereas if you come across something that just helps you out, okay, here's a few tips. Start with your own blog, then maybe submit the odd article once you get some good feedback. Then that's a lot more likely to move you along the line, as it were, to make you into that great writer you want to be. And it's the same with fitness. You know, anyone who says this one dietary tip could make you lose 30 to 40 pounds in a month, they're conning you. That doesn't happen unless that one dietary tip is stop eating.
Yeah.
And perhaps.
Because the thing is when you have, you know, oftentimes they will, like, one of the rules of copywriting is never to lie, but at the same time, like, the connection to the truth can be so small, let's just say, there's so little connection to the truth that, okay, maybe you can get away with it if you spend an hour justifying it, but, you know, 99% of the connection is just, you know, clickbait bullcrap. So, definitely need the skeptical goggles, that's for sure.
Yeah, yes, and it just helps in every area of life. You know, it just arms you so you don't get ripped off on things. And we've spoken about this many times, but, you know, if you want to avoid procrastination, then, you know, maybe say, okay, I'm going to, you know, look at these three highly rated websites and use my skeptical thinking in order to pick which approach is best for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Optimization trap, Nick.
Oh, yeah. So the optimization trap, I just spoke of that a little bit. It was the, you know, like the planning out your periodization for 6 months, but, you know, failing to get your ass into the gym.
Right. Yeah.
So if you spend, you know, 12 hours doing that, that's 12 hours you could have been training, even poorly. It still would have gotten you better results than otherwise. And since you were, since you were talking about the skeptical goggles, I just wanted to also point out that knowledge of, say, diet or training, the two things that we always talk about, right, is always ever expanding, right? It's always getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But the foundations or the fundamentals really don't. It's like diet, you know, you have energy, your energy balance, basically. That's at the foundation of every kind of dietary change that you really need to worry about for body composition. It's energy balance, you know, calories in, calories out. But, you know, there's a lot of to-do about, you know, auto-regulation and all this other stuff. But really, it's all about energy balance. And same thing with training. You know, if the methods don't talk about stress and recovery, then you're really, really off base. And so I'd say, you know, about half of the crap out there, it's just like, well, they don't even talk about calories. So how are we going to work with energy balance, you know, if we're not even talking about calories? Calories aren't on the table. And that actually, I read that recently, of the people that are dieting, something like it was 45 to 50%, somewhere in there. They weren't looking at their calories at all. So it's just like, well, how are you going to lose weight? Just magically, the calories are going to disappear because you're restricting one thing and you don't think you're going to overeat on another thing. You know, it's just absolutely ridiculous. So half the people, they're just getting the fundamental, most important thing wrong because they're not paying attention to energy balance whatsoever. And same thing with training. Yeah. It's like, well, I'm going to go to the gym and, okay, there's lots of ways to induce stress. You know, are we going to be going for volume, for intensity? Are we looking for endurance? Are we looking for power? What are we going after? But there are lots of ways to make stress. And, you know, if we're not talking about stress, overload, recovery, you know, an adaptation, these things, then you're just completely missing the mark. It's like, well, I'm going to go to work out. What are you going to do? Well, I'm going to jog on the treadmill. Why? Because that's healthy. Okay, if your goal is maybe an increase in circulation, but there's 100 other things you could be doing. So, again, with the skeptical goggles, like, we try to explain the world by categories, as I've done here, except there are very few things that we know with a lot of certainty. So, you know, like, when it comes to diets, you have your good food versus bad food. That's like a very common categorization. And then you put your good foods here, your bad foods there. Or, you know, some people will say, well, the diet that we had 10,000 years ago, you know, has been filtered by evolution, therefore it is the best diet. It's like, well, it's probably not a bad diet, but who says it's the best diet? Is it better than our current diets? Perhaps, unless you're, you know, an elite athlete and all this other stuff. But beware of categories and frameworks, because they can be – that's the main message. Beware of categories, beware of frameworks, because everybody's got an agenda, and everybody agrees on the fundamentals, so why don't we just stick with the fundamentals and then kind of customize from there based on preference?
Yeah, that's a good point. And just to sort of throw it into sharp relief, you know, how long did it take us asking questions to totally deconstruct the whole paleo thing?
Yeah.
2 minutes. Yeah. Oh, this is how our ancestors ate. Okay. A steak. That's probably more meat than our ancestors could have had access to in a year. You know, the scrawny goat that they used to cart around for some, you know, the odd bit of milk here and there, even if they'd slaughtered that, they probably wouldn't have got the equivalent of one steak off it.
Yeah, so, there's so many different things for that. Actually, I might – would you be up for a podcast on that in the future? Because I actually made a mind map for the whole evolution argument from evolution and kind of deconstructing that a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right. We did our paleo podcast, but
this is more than just paleo. It's taking, yeah. I mean, it's generally the paleo crowd, but there are a lot of arguments popping up from evolution, and you know, you've got. I don't think we'll weave epigenetics into there because I'm not well versed, but basically just the arguments from evolution, which, you know, pisses off a lot of Bible-thumping people. And to be honest, you don't have to be a Bible-thumper to be pissed off, because a lot of that shit pisses me off, too, because it's creative storytelling rather than empirical evidence-based, or making stories from empirical evidence. Oftentimes, they just make up stories instead of, you know, having the evidence and connecting the dots, because people want an easy explanation or a story they can remember. Rather than just a bunch of random facts because nobody remembers that or cares or, you know, can do much with it. So, maybe we'll do that in the future as well.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds like a good one. But, you're talking about evolution and, yes, you could have an argument that the introduction of grains and carbohydrates other than berries and... had a major influence on our levels of health. You know, I've read various archaeological articles where they've found, around 10,000 years, humans were around 10,000 years ago, and they're carrying more body fat, and it's thought that greater body fat was due to, the new and sudden influx of eating bread, for example.
Yeah.
But you've got to remember, back then they wanted body fat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't blame that for solving their problem and giving you a problem just because you love your bread. Yeah. That was a massive problem solver for them back in those days. But they survived a few months longer. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, kind of bringing it back to procrastination. Why do we procrastinate?
Yeah.
It's kind of fun to beg the question there. I'm not an expert on this by any means, but it seems to be that one of the reasons that we procrastinate is because maybe our heart's not in it. It's kind of a natural way of going, you really want to do this? Are you sure? Is this the right road to be going down? You know, and sometimes the answer is like, yes, I'm just being a lazy SOB that, you know, and I just need to get off my ass and do something because it'll be good for me and I'll enjoy it later. So that's some of the time, but a lot of the time it's like, you don't do things because you know that it's just going to make life miserable, and in that case, it's better not to do them. So procrastination, I don't want to say is a bad thing by any means. It can be a very, very good thing, saving you from going down roads that you shouldn't travel. It's just that when you know it's the right thing to be doing, then how do you get around it? And again, just get started on something and then make small improvements as you go along, I'd say is definitely the best strategy I've come across with, anyway.
Yeah. I think in 21st century Western culture, the main reason, I think most people know that they should exercise. You know, we talk about the specifics of exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah. If more people just did something, and, you know, just stopped eating quite so many carbs all the time, then they'd probably, get some sort of result from that, you know, and probably quite a favourable result from that. But the procrastination happens because people perceive exercise as being really painful, and I really don't get it. Maybe because my definition of pain is different than a lot of people. You know, most people think a low level of discomfort is painful. And I'm like, no, that's just accept that, yes, your muscles are going to burn when you hit the 7, 8, 9, 10 rep mark on a set of squats. Accept that your lungs are going to feel like they're going to explode. They're not. You know, really, they're not going to explode. And the reason you procrastinate and turn or delay these sorts of actions is this perceived pain. It's not really pain. You know, pain is, it's not really fair if I start talking about pain because,
the human pincushion speaks of pain.
I
the balloon. who thinks he's going to pop if a pin goes in.
I've got my headphones on listening to Dimmu Borgir while they're giving me lumbar punch chemo. And I'm like, yeah, come on, let me have it.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. The doctors just thought I was completely nuts. But that's a way of reframing, which I know you're going to talk about later. But really, exercise isn't painful. You have to think of it as being something, you know, that stress on the lungs, that stress on the muscles, that stress just on your joints is actually good for you, and you should welcome it. You shouldn't shy away from it. And once you actually, once you get to that point, then it's a lot easier to actually act and avoid sort of the procrastination. Obviously, until your best buddy says, hey, let's go down the pub and have a few beers. That's another thing you have to guard against. But if it's
you can procrastinate on that kind of thing. It's like, yeah, I'll be there in just a minute. And then you know, put it off. There is such a thing as positive procrastination, and a lot of people just don't get that. This is a strategy I use very frequently in Korea, and I would probably use it more. You would have used it more in the States if I'd thought of it at the time, but it's just a very useful strategy. It's like, if it's important, people are going to keep coming back to you about it, and if it's not, you're not going to hear about it again. So why would you, it depends on what you're doing, of course, but if you're doing other people's work, you know, let them remind you once or twice that something needs to be done, because, you know, if it's important, they will, and if it's not, then they might just be giving you busy work. I mean, obviously, context dependent, all that stuff, but, procrastination is often a very good strategy when it's, you know, just shit that's being handed down to you.
Yes. Yes, and you could say also that procrastination, delayed gratification, is a way of procrastinating in a positive way.
Elaborate, please.
So if you're craving donuts and you say, right, I'm not having them until I've done my deadlift session today.
Oh yeah.
Then that delayed gratification, you're delaying the gratification of the donuts to a time when, A, it's not going to have such a disastrous effect on your body, but you're prioritizing what you should be doing over what you want to do, and that's a kind of procrastination, I guess. You're still putting off what you could have now for later.
Yep.
So that delayed gratification would be a positive form of procrastination, I guess.
Yeah, and that brings to mind the 10-minute rule, or I've heard different variations of it, 5-minute rule, 15-minute rule, but I think this was first mentioned in the Willpower Instinct, at least that's where I came across it, and it's basically, you know, it's a great dietary strategy, which is simply, when you want something that you shouldn't be having, all you say, you don't say, especially if you're dieting and you've been at it for a while, you know, and the cravings are starting to set in and stuff, you don't say, okay, I can't have this. You just say, all right, I'm going to put this out of mind. You know, I'm just going to put this out of my view for 10 minutes. And, you know, you don't set a timer. You just look at the clock, make a mental note. You know, put this out of view, out of mind for 10 minutes. And if I still want it in 10 minutes, I can have it. And half the time you forget about it, and it's no big deal. And that just saves you from it. It's a form of positive procrastination. Whereas, if those 10 minutes go by, then fine, you get to have it. But you're making a really good habit, and, you know, instead of 100% of the time, you're just gorging on, you're having whatever you are trying to restrict, you know, at least some of the time you're not going to be having it. So that's one of the little strategies that I really like if you're doing like a severe caloric deficit or something like that. But it's just a good habit to have generally. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was thinking of saying at the time with my donut example that, you do your heavy lifting and then you probably just feel like eating a hunk of meat and some good carbohydrates rather than the sugary goodness of a Krusty Kreme, ain't it?
Oh, I don't know, dude. I think I'll always go for the Krispy Kremes.
I think you would.
I got back into the Korean airport and I found out that they'd opened a Krispy Kreme, and I was there within about 2 minutes.
And that was using delayed gratification.
No, I was too tired. I'd been up for like 30 hours. So like I knew willpower was out the window. I was just like, okay, Nick, you're going to limit it to three. Limit it to three. Yeah. That's all. So I just, that was enough. That was perfect. I was going to come back to the training thing real quickly, which is when you were talking about your expectations. A lot of people think it's going to be miserable, and it's one of those self-fulfilling prophecies. Like a lot of beginners will go, all right, I need to train so that I feel absolutely terrible. And so then they go into the gym, and they feel absolutely terrible because that's how they train.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to bring that up because like a lot of the people I've trained, I'm like, all right, you're done for today. And they're like, what? I can do more. I'm like, yeah, but you've done enough. And they're like, but I don't feel bad. And it's like, no, you don't need to feel bad. You need to, you need that form to break down a little bit and, then recover. And, at this point or do, you've done a bunch of sets. You haven't exercised for a long time. That's plenty for today. And then they're like, but I don't feel, it's like, screw feelings.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be intelligent here. Work smarter, not harder. And, or in your case, I quoted you in Fat Loss 101, I think, work smarter and harder. But, you know, for a lot of beginners, they're making it a miserable experience. It has nothing to do with us trainers. They are out there to get themselves demotivated so they don't have to do it again. And, you know, it's not a conscious thing, I don't think. I mean, but it might be. A lot of people just love self-sabotage. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a miserable experience. It can be very enjoyable. You know, you will have to work hard at some point in order to keep getting results, but, you know, you'll be kind of adapted to that hard work and it won't be a big deal. So, you know, hard training is relative. You know, you're not squatting 1,000 pounds because you can't handle it. But, you know, if you squat 100 and that's like a 9 RPE, and then later on you're squatting 200 at a 9 RPE and a 300 at a 9 RPE, you know, they're going to feel different, sure, but you're going to be able to handle all those 9 RPEs. It's, you know, and it's not going to be that much different because a 9 RPE is a 9 RPE. So.
Well, you're absolutely right. There is, there's the people who are self-sabotaging. And they think, you know, in the back of their mind, it's, well, if I trash myself in the gym for a couple of weeks, well, first of all, it might be such a short-term, goal. Yeah, I'm in the gym for the next couple of weeks before my holiday. Could be something like that. But, yes, you will have people self-sabotaging, but you'll also have the people who have actually quite a good training attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But they're chasing the pain as opposed to the numbers.
Yeah.
And that's the key thing. I'd say, obviously, in powerlifting, it's the key thing. You know, and I keep coming back to, you know, my powerlifting base. But don't forget, dear listener, that before I had a powerlifting base, I was into the bodybuilding back in the 80s, when you had people like Tom Platz who used to say, I explore the darkest reaches of pain in the gym. And I've learned to really question that approach and say, there's no real point exploring the darkest reaches of pain. It's about stimulating the muscle. That's all. And there's quite a good phrase, stimulate, not annihilate. And I absolutely think that is true. You want to break down the muscle fiber. Then you want to go and eat. That's it. And sleep. That's bodybuilding for you. Stimulate, feed, recover, repeat. That's it. That's all you're doing. It's really, really, really simple. Yeah. Getting stronger.
Again, there are millions of combinations of ways to stimulate the muscle, and we can argue ad nauseum for a lifetime or for several lifetimes about what the best method is given, you know, certain desired outcomes, but it's not complicated.
You know,
do a little more progressively over time, keep eating, done, repeat, you know,
And the thing is, you see the skinny guys in gyms do all these sort of, you know, we've got one of our early podcasts, I think it's the 20-somethings, called Favorite Intensification Techniques.
Mm-hmm.
You see these skinny guys running the rack that sort of, you know, grab the 10-pound dumbbells, go up to the 15s, the 20s, 25, 30, and then go back down again. And they'll say, oh, my biceps are trashed. But you'll see the guy with 18, 19-inch arms just doing a set of strict curls. You know, and as soon as their technique breaks down, that's it, that's enough. I've stimulated the muscle. I'm using 2.5 pounds more than I did last time. That's all good. That's
the best is when he's using like 2.5 pounds more than the skinny guy.
That was you, wasn't it?
That basically, yeah.
Workout.
Yeah.
Oh boy, yeah, but it's always, and Nick is a mathematician, so I know he's going to agree with me on this. You chase the numbers, or you chase the numbers intelligently. You don't blindly chase the numbers. You blindly chase the numbers, which I used to do. You're setting yourself up for injury and disappointment. When the numbers are there to be taken, you take them.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time, you just train hard. Yeah, sensibly hard, but yeah, again, chasing numbers. Okay. It might not be a PR, but it's 98% of my best. That's fine. And then next time it might be 102% and new PR. Whoopie doo. Whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, well, that was a nice little tangent.
Well,
off the first one.
There you go. You put down three main points, and we can still talk about it for an hour and a half. Yep. It's just we're just like that.
it's all good though. We'll see how the rest of them go here. But so shall we move on to number two here?
Yeah.
All right. So first thing, you don't start. That's a problem. Second thing, you do start, and you're not skilled at what you're doing, which isn't that big of a problem. It's really a problem when you're not aware of it, though. For example, if you want to be a long distance runner and all you've done is purchased one book on running, bought all the gear, and now you're running, say, 10 miles a day, but you've never been with a trainer, you've never gotten any feedback, you've never taken a video of yourself, you don't know what your stride looks like, and you're going, why are my knees hurting, and why is all this crap happening, and you don't actually get any assistance or something, this would be like unskilled and unaware, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of 20-something women, especially with the knees, you know, will do a bunch of running, and then by 30, they're pretty much crippled for life, they can't run anymore, you know, it's a very sad thing to have happen. So if you are going to progress in something, I think there's no excuse not to become more knowledgeable as you're progressing, and to seek out feedback from people who, you know, have been at it for a while.
Yeah, Chris, what am I going to do for upper body? You get a bench press, and you get an overhead press. You get your face pulls, and you get to do pull ups, pull downs. Oh, but what about this? No. You're just doing that. There's four exercises there. You need to develop that skill. The skill in performing each exercise. You literally need to do thousands of reps to develop the skill. Thousands of good reps. Yeah, not trashy reps with too much weight that you have no business lifting. But you start off and you develop that skill. It's really important. You know, you don't start off as Nick said, as a distance runner and sign up for your first marathon and expect to run it in under 3 hours. It just doesn't happen. You have to learn the skill. And a lot of people will say, yeah, but yeah, what's simpler than, hey, Nick, what's simpler than picking a bar up off the floor?
Picking a donut out of a Krispy Kreme box.
Yeah, but, you know, you talk about an exercise like the deadlift. And there's a lot of technique that goes into it. And the guys that I have at
that side. I was honestly, I'd read a bit about it. I just wanted to add that, you know, I have learned a lot more about the deadlift since that comment, even though I think I knew a bit about it. But, you can just get extremely technical with all of these things. So, ridiculously technical.
Absolutely. I've spent, and you know, I'm sure everyone will sort of nod their head and go, I bet you have. I've spent 3 hours with a bunch of relatively advanced trainers. Okay, so these are people who works for a friend of mine up in London. I spent 2.5 hours deconstructing the bench press of all things. Well, you just lie down and you lower the bar and you press it up and you rack. No, there's a lot more to it than that. And they were absolutely, had their minds blown. And they go, okay, so when would you progress a climb, from bench press to another variation? And the answer is, once they've really, really, really ingrained that skill. So it's probably going to be sort of between 80 and 100 kilos for sets of five. Before you really start thinking about doing other things, before you start going, well, actually, I feel like my chest is still a bit flat, even though I can bench press 100 for five. Yeah, you don't say, well, you can't shape bone, can you? You know, you need some muscle to start with.
Yeah.
You need to develop the skills involved in order to to develop that muscle. Anyway, sorry, I'm saying the same thing over and over again, but yeah.
But different examples here. I mean, it's because it is a – and you mentioned something that I didn't cover, which was that, you know, the person looking for the bench press and a billion different variations. Again, you know, if you're spending all your time majoring in the minors, you know, you're never going to make it to the majors, kind of a thing. So, yeah. You know, it's there's lack of skill. There's, you know, the wrong focused, but, you know, a very dangerous state is being unskilled and unaware of it. You know, at least if you're aware that you're not skilled, you can do something about it. But unskilled and unaware, you know, that's the worst place to be. So, you know, seek out help, even if you don't think you need it, from people that you can trust. I think that's one of the most important things. And, you know, hopefully they're, you know, it was hard to get your trust. Because if you're easy to convince, then any idiot might lead you astray.
Well, there's just so many resources now to for good coaching. Obviously, I'd say our videos are right up there. But go to a powerlifter. Okay? That's you want to learn how to bench press. Go to an unequipped powerlifter. They'll be able to show you how to bench press.
You bet.
Most powerlifters don't even realize how much they know. Yeah, they know, well, there's a few of them that I'm surprised at how little they know and get away with it, but, yeah. Yeah, once they actually sit down and think about it, they go, oh, yeah, I suppose I do know that you have to, do this, and do that, and do the other. Anyways.
Yeah, well, let's. When it comes to powerlifting, because of the loads, I'm sorry, I'm getting some feedback here, Chris.
I'm sorry.
When it comes to the loads involved, like to make progress in, you know, powerlifting, you can't really just keep doing the same thing. You have to find out, okay, what's the weakest link? How do I address it? And how do I move forward? So like anybody who's been at powerlifting for a long time and continually made improvements, I mean, it's just inescapable. You have to keep learning. So whereas I think, don't crucify me here, but I would say with bodybuilding, it's a little less complicated, in terms of what you're doing for the exercises, to make progress, because really it's, you know, there's a whole lot of, okay, we'll do more, feed it. And, you know, if we're starting to talk anabolics and stuff, then that stuff, you know, it isn't so much about what you're lifting, you know, it's the chemical cocktails that are going along with it.
Yeah. But I'd say for bodybuilders, they should initially start with something like a 5 sets of 5 type of routine. You know,
oh,
like
you bet.
In Becoming Mighty. It's very simple. And when you start to stall out on the 5 sets of 5, then you might do a little wave. So session 1, you might do 5 sets of 8. Session 2, 5 sets of 5. Session 3, 5 sets of 3. And just by adding in that slight fluctuation of repetitions, you're changing a lot of, you're helping yourself continue to progress. And then, you know, it could be just, even going from 3, 5, and 8 to 2, 4, and 6 will make a difference.
Oh, you bet.
You know? Just these very small, you know, people think you have to change the movement. You have to change it all up. Yeah, and you often hear bodybuilders say, I'm changing it all up. Why are you changing it all up? Why are you going from, I'm going to go from doing the barbell bench press to do Smith machine or hammer strength machine or something like that. Well, why are you doing that? I can understand that, you know, when you're preparing for a competition and you're 5'9", 5'10", 200 pounds at 10% body fat, that, yeah, you want to get some extra work after you've done your main exercise, whatever it is. You might go on the hammer strength machine or something like that. But it's well down the list of priorities.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's kind of scary because I've been doing, I think, pretty much the same damn program for about a year now, but making progress. And losing weight, and all I vary really are the loads used, you know, that goes up slowly over time, the intensities that I'm working with, and, you know, the total volume, you know, but usually one of those at a time. You know, so yeah, there's very little variation, but, you know, it allows for continuous progress because you're stressing the body in different ways. You want to increase your work capacity, you up your volume for a while, and you decrease the intensity a bit, and then you use that higher work capacity to work with heavier weights, you know, and, yeah, and you know, the cycle basically, you know, repeats as long as you're doing, you know, you're getting your recovery in there, and it's just improve. But, you know, you have to, it's almost like a step back to take a step forward, but it's not, because you're doing the same damn thing. It's just, you know, slightly lower intensity, slightly higher volume kind of a thing. This, yeah. But a small change. It's very small.
Yeah, I remember we used to joke with your training. Are you doing deadlifts 5 days a week or twice a week?
And the answer is right now, it's funny because I use the same template, but it's broken in so like it has like a squat press, two blocks of squat press. So like I could do squat and press in a workout. Yeah. But since I only can squat, 1 day a week at the gym in my other place, I just put two of those together. And basically it's almost like rolling the dice now. I just make sure that my volume for my week is done. So I just check off all the boxes. Yeah. So if I have two sessions, fine. If I have five sessions, fine. You know, what am I feeling like for the week? You know, if I have a really good day, I might do three things. You know, I might do squat, press, and, bench or something. And that's fine. If I'm having a great day, why not? And then, you know, take an extra day for recovery. But, you know, my volume is steadily increasing very slightly week to week. And, you know, I'm getting a lot of variability, which I think is a good thing in a sense. For the loading, as long as, you know, it's kind of like the calories. You've got your calories over the weekly total is very important. The daily total, not so much. You know, where are you at the end of the week is what's important. And I think the same is true for training, because you can say, well, I'm going to train 5 days a week or 2 days a week. And if you're training 2 days a week, you have to kill yourself all the time. And I'm finding it's nice to be a little flexible there and just have the volume set for the week and get it done however, you know, feels best or suits my mood. And I don't know. I'm enjoying it. That's kind of my variability right now.
Yeah. No, good stuff. But yeah, just to reiterate for the listener, yeah, like Nick says, you don't have to change the exercise. A lot of the time, you shouldn't be changing the exercise. But what you can change is frequency. So that's the amount of times a week or a month you train. Okay? You can change the volume. So that's the amount of sets and reps that you do, or the amount of, we could say sets, reps, weight, so tonnage.
You could say your work. Yeah, the work for the week. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. You can make small micro fluctuations on that just by doing, you know, maybe one session doing three sets of five and then the next session doing five sets of five, and then maybe a super high volume day where you do 10 sets of five. Yeah, that's the way you can fluctuate it. And you can also manipulate intensity as well. So you might do 10 sets of five with 80% of your max, whereas you do five sets of five with 85% of your max, and you do three sets of five. This would be a beginner, by the way, or a relatively new trainer. Three sets of five with 90%.
Yep.
Okay. So that's a way of manipulating your volume. Or it might be something like, three sets of five at 80, 85, 90%. So you're adding weight each set. You see how many different ways you can do it without actually changing the movement.
Yeah, there's, I mean, just putting the combinations together, it literally could be, you know, keep you busy for a lifetime without ever changing the movement. So yeah, the importance of movement selection is second to none, really. It's which movement is the right one for the goal, and then how do you change up your other variables. And sometimes it is appropriate to train for a while with a, you know, a two-board bench or something like that. But, you know, that's when you're really advanced and you should understand this stuff. So,
yeah, do you know why you're doing it? You're not doing it just because it allows you to lift more weight.
Yeah.
You're doing it for a specific reason, that you're missing lifts 2 inches off the chest or higher. Yeah, that's why you would add in something like that. But yeah. Yeah, good point, Nick. And yeah, I think people, when they're selecting, this is sort of going back to the first point again, when you're suffering paralysis of analysis. Yeah, you look at, you know, myself and Nick, we recommend really the big four lifts, which are squat, deadlift, bench press, overhead press, or an appropriate variation of, you know, not everyone can overhead press off the bat, as it were. Okay. Yeah. Mark Rippetoe pretty much recommends the same thing, but he throws in the power clean as well. Jim Vendler recommends bench, overhead press, squat, deadlift. There's so many, you know, the old Bill Starr, who died recently, he is credited with really sort of being the first person to popularize the 5x5 type of training. You know, with him it was squat, bench, press, deadlift, power clean, and he'd use three of those exercises within that framework. So most good coaches agree that it's those four exercises you should be concentrating on. So why the hell are you doing ab machine crunches and tricep pushdowns?
Or better yet, why are three of those four missing from your workout? Or why aren't any of them in your workout? That is just retarded. Sorry. It's like, I'm going to go to the gym and not do the important things.
You know, it's another guy who you know, pushes those big four lifts, Christian Thibodeau.
Oh, yeah. Brooks Kubrick, I think he's got. I mean, yeah, it's Kubrick. Yeah, anyway.
Although Brooks would, you know, he'd want you benching and pressing with a, yeah, 10-inch diameter barbell or a rock.
Sure,
or something.
Sure. Everybody's got their own little sacred cows, but it's the same lifts. It's you know, at the core, it's those are the big ones. Once you've got the strength to do, you know, to do them, or the equipment to do them, that's what you should be progressing towards, you know, and then using to just keep getting stronger.
Absolutely, and it's amazing how much it carries over. You know, if you do your deadlifts and your presses and your benches and your squats, and, you know, after a couple of years, you sort of chatting to someone in the gym and you go, yeah, I'll do a few curls here. And you end up curling the 25 or 30 kilo dumbbells for sets of 10. People are looking at you going, man, I never see you do curls, but you're strong. It's like, well, doesn't everyone use this? And then you look around and realise that, no, they don't. But what enabled you to just go and grab those 25 kilo or 30 kilo dumbbells and just start doing curls? It's the strength you probably got, probably from the deadlift. But it's the strength you got from that enables you to do all these other exercises. You know, you get up to a 315-pound bench press and you're training with your buddy, having a bit of fun at the end, and you put the tricep pushdown stack on the full stack and do some pushdowns and blow their mind, even though you've never done it before. Anyway.
Yeah, I think, well, was it Wendler or something? He said he wanted, like, talking to Rippetoe in an interview. He said, I believe it was Wendler and Rippetoe in this interview. And he said, you know, I just want to be so strong that I can clean 400 pounds poorly and make it happen or something like that. he's like, I don't care about learning the form. You know, I was like, I just want to be strong enough that I can just do that. And that's what happens when you're just strong. You know, you can just do other things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's stunning how it does carry over. It really does. Anyway, where are we, Nick?
I think we're at the last point, which is kind of tied into this previous one. But so we had the procrastination for number one, lack of skill for number two, and then failure to improve for number three. So I don't have this on the mind map, Chris, but I was just going to run over quickly. I'm not sure what they're called, actually, but kind of stages of competence. where you start off, you know, you're unconsciously incompetent. You know, you don't know that you suck at squatting because you don't know what a squat is.
Is this the Prochaska Necromancy cycle? Or?
No. I can't even remember where I pulled this thing from, but I've seen it a few times before. But the first one is unconsciously incompetent. Then you've got consciously incompetent, right? So that you know that you're bad at squats, for example. And you know, this is kind of where, you know, the learning begins. And then you've got consciously competent. You find out, okay, I'm actually getting pretty good at the squat here. My numbers have gone up. I've been at it for a few years. Things are getting easier. I just keep making progress. This is awesome. And eventually you get to unconsciously competent, like a world-class chef. You're like, chef, well, how do I make this dish like you do? And he's like, well, I don't know because I'm just that good. I can't really instruct you because I'm going to miss things that I do automatically now. And, you know, it's the same thing in the squat. It's like, oh, well, I might be doing these things and then, you know, not mention something obvious because, you know, I don't have to think about it ever. And, oh, okay, sorry, forgot to mention this, but you need to, you know, push those knees out because otherwise they might cave in with heavy loads like that, you know, because, you know, it just becomes easy and automatic. So you don't have to think about it. And so kind of the, you know, failure to improve. Obviously you've got that second stage or the second reason for failure is lack of skill. But once you're aware that you lack skill, then, you know, if you don't keep improving, you know, obviously you might hit a plateau, get discouraged, not break through it, self-efficacy goes down, and you just give up because you don't see any way to really go forward or you lose interest or something. But, you know, a big reason for failure is just because you're not working at it. You don't try to keep improving, keep learning new things, and, you know, keep making the old stuff fresh and new. Which, you know, if you want to be married happily for 40 years, I'm coming on year 10 here, you know, you got to keep on looking for ways to make things fun and fresh and new because you get to know that other person really well. And the same thing goes for your training and stuff. I mean, if you're going in it, you're just like, I'm going to go train because that's a novel thing to do. Well, you know, keep learning because you're only going to get the novelty if you keep on expanding your knowledge or exposing yourself to new things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. In training, you know, I know you're talking more generalized there, obviously even going down the route of long-term relationships, but, with training, you have to, the problem I always had was I always wanted to be really good at everything. And I was really bad at backing off, having a week or two off after a monster cycle of, you know, 6 months of training and competitions and all the rest of it. But I'd hate missing time. I'd hate the whole idea of getting weaker. Boy, in the last year, that's been fixed. Yeah, sometimes the best thing to do is just to, when you've hit a new peak, is just to cut back. Okay, now you can squat 180 kilos for 5. Right, you're going to cut back your first cycle, back after a week off. You're just going to do 130 for 5. And you're going to do 120 for 8 and 110 for 12 or whatever. Whatever you're doing. And then you slowly build it up again because you can't hold on to a peak. A peak is a peak for a reason. You know, it's like, going back to your long-term relationship, example, Nick. You know, a peak in your relationship might be a fantastic holiday that you had. Yeah, for every holiday you had, you have to come home and you have to, get back, answer all those bloody emails and
argue about who's going to do the dishes. And
exactly, yeah. Get the shopping done and do this and do that and the day-to-day stuff. And then you build up for another, you know, great emotional peak where you do something else that's amazing together. It's almost the same with training. It's the same with nutrition. Yeah, you don't have bodybuilders hold on to 3% body fat for longer than probably a few hours. A few hours when they're in contest shape, and that's it.
Get the photos done real quick. Get them on the front of every magazine so people think they look like it year-round.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Traps for beginners.
Yeah.
I'm really trying to figure out. I think the diet one is very easy because, like, what I encourage, you know, my clients to do is to, you know, just to cut down, lose some fat, and then try to get their maintenance levels higher than they were before. You know, so that they can just always have an easier, and I mean, if their goal is fat loss, my goal is to get them eating as much as friggin' possible, you know, every cycle that they go through, because that's just going to make the dieting easier and easier and easier as they go along. Instead of getting harder and harder and harder, you know, they're getting leaner all the time and just feeling better every cut, and it becomes no big deal. And I haven't fully explored this. I'm wondering how lean I can stay year round and then, like, you know, get really cut at the same time. So we'll see where that ends up. But I mean, it's pretty damn lean right now. you know, the strength levels haven't taken a hit once I got kind of a handle on the volume and stuff that I could use during the most severe parts of the cut. So if you back off properly, then that stuff doesn't really have to suffer. I just ran myself into a hole for a couple of years, and that was probably the biggest reason for my failure to get leaner for a couple of years. Do less, high intensity.
You also had different goals for a while, didn't you? You know, you were powerlifting, trying to qualify for national championships and stuff like that, so.
Oh, yeah, and that was completely different. that year, I blew up quite a bit with you. You're just like, screw the diet, take off the gloves, train proper, eat proper, sleep a lot. And like, okay, let's do it. And that was awesome.
The sausage belly.
Yep.
That's it. Oh,
good stuff. So, I guess another reason for failure that you just mentioned, you know, failure to focus or prioritize.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything written there. But, if you don't know you try to be good at everything, obviously you're going to end up like a CrossFitter and not very good at a lot of things.
Absolutely. That's a good example. Good analogy there. It's tough, though. Yeah, that's where you need to be. Yeah, that's where I think it's actually quite good. If you have the financial clout to have someone like me, have your programs written for you by Mike Tushera or someone like that. I'm going with one of the few people who I actually think is a better programmer than I am. The thing is, if you were to follow his programs for, say, 3 months, the amount you would learn about programming would probably be invaluable to you. And it would be worth every penny you spend on having him write programs for you.
Yeah. And it's funny because money doesn't really seem to be an issue for the person who, you know, has a passion, who has a strong focus and is really likely to succeed. You know, it's the people that don't want to spend the money. They don't want to spend the time, you know. They want the results without the work, or without the investment. And I'd say those people are a lot less likely to succeed in general.
Yeah, I can.
I mean, Russ, I don't think is terribly affluent, to my understanding. No. But he pays Mike Tushera to write programs for him.
Yeah.
Because it's important to him. So, you know, again, if it's important to you, you know, money's not really an issue. It's like, well, maybe he goes to the movies less or something. I don't know how he makes it happen, but, you know, you do make it happen if it's important. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, he just doesn't go out Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. You know, he goes out Saturday night and that's it. You know, the rest of the time he doesn't get hammered. There's a few, you know, the strength and conditioning or powerlifting realm who, I'd say are probably go-to guys more than myself, for example. You know, Mike Tushera is one of them, Brian Cowell's another, and, the amount of knowledge Ed Cohn has, I don't know if Ed does Ed do, personalized training for people?
I know he has an online community now. So I would imagine he might I can't imagine that he would be writing people's individual programs. He might do that. I don't know. But most likely he might be able to look over something that you've got and be like, nope, you got to do this. Or why are you being an idiot? You know, do this instead. So you're going to get that kind of thing. But that can be a learning experience in its own as well.
Yeah, I know Brandon, Lily, and people like that do it. But, they each have their shtick, as it were. I'd probably, if I was paying for it, I'd go with Mike, maybe Brian Carroll. I think Brian's got a lot of good stuff to say as well. And a lot of the time it depends when you're at that, but this is for advanced people I'm talking about here. I'm not talking about, you beginners, just buy my damn book and follow that.
Beginners, yeah. Intermediates, upper intermediates, early advanced.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, don't get Mike to write your programs for you. It's okay. Yeah, I don't want to do him out of business. That's the last thing I want to do. But, you're just not at that level yet to need someone like him. Yeah, but if you get to that level, then he's your man, I would say.
Definitely. Anyways.
Yeah, so becoming mighty at first, or the mighty method after a while. Yeah, there's lots of good programs in there.
Templates you can use for a long time.
Yeah, long, long time.
Yep. Basically, all the guys I train are still using Becoming Mighty programs. So,
yeah.
Yep, not onto the Mighty method yet. Give them. But they're doing well. Like one guy's he's been training with me off and on for about 2 years, but the off periods obviously make a big difference. But he's getting close to 1.5 bodyweight squat, and the other guy is getting close to that's been with me for about 2 years. He's getting close to a 2x bodyweight deadlift, which is great. Good on you, Ben. Keep up the good work, Mr. Consistency.
Way to go, Ben. Oh yeah, I was told off. I'll give shout outs to Dark Side lifters who have various things, and I haven't welcomed David, who is one of our new boys. He sort of started coming down once a week, and now it's a little bit more once or twice a week at the moment. He's coming down. He's a competitive power lifter, and I think he holds a national record in the deadlift, which is, it's nice to have. Great to have you coming down, David. He's a skeptic as well, so it's quite nice having him about. We have some good giggles when certain other people start talking crap.
When Dante's talking about unicorns and shit. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And, congratulations to, Darren has been very lazy, recently. He's decided to do bench press only, for this last competition. And he managed to set a British record at 192.5.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Which is barely body weight. that's harsh. That's really harsh. No, well done, Desla. He being the drama queen he is, I think he's telling everyone that 6 British records he's broken now, and he holds them all, because you have single lift records and full meet records and all sorts of stuff. So, He has a lot of records. he collects British records.
Hey, that's a good collection.
Yeah, good on him. Good on him. Russ is still training hard. Graham's still training hard. We've got a couple of guys just coming back now. Joe and Sam are just coming back. Hopefully, they'll get their acts together and get back to some good lifting. The youngest guy I've got here, Ryan, he's he's doing amazingly well. He's closing in on a 200 deadlift. So, he's a bit like you, Nick. He does deadlifts every day just to grease the groove and just sort of, you know, yesterday he said, just did a few sets of five at 150. That was nice.
Yep.
I was sort of going, a few months ago, 150 was, new territory for you, and look where you are now.
It's rapid, and when you're built for a deadlift, you know, it's so much fun in the beginning because you're just like, holy crap, I can't believe I have this much weight on the bar.
Well, you get some long arms people, you know, at the gym I work at, or used to work at, whatever way we want to express that at the moment. I remember a couple of guys, two sessions, they're over 200 kilos.
Yep.
just because they're built for it. And they're rugby players and, they've got a, rugby players have a very high level of athletic strength, should we say. But, straight away you're putting, I think the first session, one of them did 190 and I just stopped him there. But he had more in the tank and he did 210 in the second session and that set the gym record and he left it.
Gym record?
Yeah, it's not very high, the spa gym record. Not many. You got to remember that most of the guys I get through there are of a certain age and then,
sure.
To be honest, they haven't got any business deadlifting from the floor.
Yeah.
They're too stiff. They need more mobility work and stuff like that before they can do that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Anyway, we got off on a massive tangent again, but.
Yeah, well, how about I just do a quick recap? Possible solutions. Oh, I'm getting some feedback here again. Possible solutions, and then we'll wrap it up there.
You get the feedback when I actually look at my screen.
Stop it.
Well, I just have it lying flat. I'm just sort of chatting in the microphone here. So I was just trying to follow along for what you're saying, but I couldn't do that.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'll take care of it, though.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess the 3 points turned into four. So failure, common causes for failing to succeed. One is procrastination. You never get started. Two, lack of skill. Three, failure to improve, and four, failure to focus or prioritize. As for possible solutions, we said for the first one, procrastination, you know, just Kaizen this stuff, get started and, you know, make some small improvements as you go along, you know, just constant and continuous improvement. Lack of skill to remedy this. Obviously, you need to do some study, practice, perhaps some coaching, and just work on your skills. Always try to get better. But it all kind of fits under the Kaizen umbrella because the third one, failure to improve. You know, well, if you're always trying to improve, that's not a problem.
And just say, Nick.
Yep.
Yeah. In training, variety is not the way to go. Just stick with a few good exercises. Okay, variety kills. So there's a lot of trainers out there and they'll sort of have their clients doing different things every day and I absolutely hate that. I think it's anathema to success. It kills success, should we say.
Yeah. So, and even there, so how you would improve, let's say you start off, you're doing bodyweight exercises and, you get really good at them. That's wonderful. If that's your starting point, you know, power to you. The constant or I think Tony Robbins calls it constant and never ending improvement or something. If you want to keep on improving, it's not just, you know, the exercises you have. You might think, you know, once you're doing a million push-ups, you know, okay, well, how can I improve this? What's a harder variation? Eventually, you're going to come to the conclusion that, well, I need to use some weights. And then you're going to get into the barbell benching or, you know, stuff like that. And eventually, you're probably going to wind up, doing squat, deadlift, benching, and overhead pressing. You know, it's just kind of, yeah, you know, if you keep on improving, you're going to find that eventually you're going to end up doing those movements. So you could just start there with the right exercise selection, or, you know, as you say, Chris, just, you know, you get started and then just keep on improving from there, but don't switch shit up all the time unless it's clearly better than what you're doing.
Yeah, just put simply, if you're in America right now and you're listening to this, go train with a bunch of powerlifters.
Yeah.
Just do that. See, yeah, they'll coach you for free, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Just show willing and help them load and unload barbells and, you know, help with the, you know, coach when you see something wrong. You coach, you become part of the team as quickly as you can. Yeah, you're like that little mongrel dog that everyone loves to have around. Yeah, just be like that for a few weeks. Ingratiate yourself, get yourself in with a group, and watch how quickly you improve. It'll be a thing of beauty. You'll be stronger and better conditioned and probably leaner than if you'd joined the gym for 5 years within 6 months.
Yeah.
Anyway. But
A commercial gym with a personal trainer for 5 years is probably not going to be the equivalent of 6 months in a powerlifting gym.
Yeah, exactly. Which is awful to say, but it's
true. Yeah.
It's true, yeah. Yeah. No, very good, Nick.
Okay. Oh, and the last thing for possible solutions was just also reframing. You know, make sure you got your head screwed on right. You know, what is important? And this is kind of coming down to, it involves everything. But, you know, I think a very important question is, you know, how can I do better? Is a very good question to just ask yourself over and over and over again, and not, you know, what is optimal or what is the best thing. It's just, how can I do better? And then kind of everything else takes care of itself.
Yeah, there's another question. Is it really that painful? Really? Oh, you poor thing. It was painful, was it? Oh, dear. You need to find out what real pain is.
This isn't what you ask yourself, though, Chris. That's what you ask everybody who's bitching.
Exactly. It's not painful. It really isn't painful. It's fun to be able to do. I tell you what, when you can't do it, you miss it.
Yeah, and if it's painful, you're doing it wrong. Sorry, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, if you're like, ow, that really hurts, it's like, you're doing it wrong. It shouldn't be painful. It's not, you don't work through the pain. There's no pain to work through. It's like, okay, there's an effort. You might have to work, you know, not be lazy, but, you know, there's no pain to work through. If you're doing that, you're probably just going to hurt yourself really, really badly.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. Yeah. But, okay. Yeah, a bit of discomfort. It's not pain.
Yeah, different things.
Yeah, I won't go into what pain is because.
Thank you.
No, but even that's not real pain. It's not like bloody hell. Yeah, these poor bastards who come back from Afghanistan with half a leg. Now I can only imagine probably having to have their dressings changed 3 times a day. How painful that actually, probably all the nerves are burnt off, but, oh, that's probably the most painful thing I've actually been conscious through, was, having a bad dressing redone.
Yep.
on my leg when it
so
was at its worst.
10 out of 10.
Oh my God. Well, they had to get the gas and air. I grabbed the nurse's wrist and said, "You're not touching me anymore." Yeah, that was painful, Nick. That was really bloody painful. A few squats isn't painful, guys. Sorry. I'll shut up.
Any more, Chris? No.
I'm becoming a bore. Oh, no.
It's all good. We all need to vent a bit. So you want to wrap us up here, Chris?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Nick. That was one of Nick's babies, obviously, because as soon as you here the topic for the Mighty Cast is failure to succeed. You know, it's our resident masters in positive psychology has thrown together a knowledge bomb as usual. So thank you very much, Nick. That was Mighty Cast 135. 135! Wow, that's a big number. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone.
Our first three odd natural numbers. Check it out. On three spots.
There you go.
I'm sure that added a ton of value to the podcast.
A ton of value. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a good week. Until next week.